The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we had quite a few things go on in the NBA this week. So let's get into the week that was the NBA. First, on Monday night, Damian Lillard, the point guard for the Portland Trail Blazers. He was drafted by the Trail Blazers, has been with them his entire career. He's remained loyal to them. And he's just had a stellar career. I kind of feel like he gets forgotten mostly because he's up in Portland, but he's been a hell of a player other than the injuries. But I mean, you could say that about a lot of players. He ended up passing the legendary Clyde Drexler as the all-time scoring leader for the Portland Trail Blazers. He surpassed him at 18,041 points versus the Oklahoma City Thunder in the third quarter. Unfortunately, that was in a loss to the Thunder, 125-121, but still, congratulations to Damian Lillard, just because the dude has been balling. He plays at a high level. He's never complained about being with the Trail Blazers. He's had a couple of, I guess you would say, tiffs with them because he wants, other good players around him, but you can't really blame him for that. But, I mean, the dude's been loyal, and he's just had a great career. And So far, it's been a good one, and now he is now the all-time leading scorer for the Portland Trail Blazers. So congrats to him. Then on Tuesday, it was announced that the Phoenix Suns, they have been sold for $4 billion. So, I believe I said they were going to sell for $3 or $4 billion, and guess what they did. So, that's a total punishment for the owner of the Suns there. Oh my God, you guys really got him. He's going to walk away with $4 billion, but gee, he's not going to own the team anymore. So, you showed the rich guy. The sale is not complete yet, of course, but they have been sold for $4 billion. So, damn, I can only imagine because it sounded like the Washington Redskins football team Commanders, they're going to be up for sale here sometime pretty soon. And so if the Phoenix Suns go for $4 billion, you can imagine how much the Washington team is going to go for, because A, they're football, and B, they actually they are a historical team, and these sports teams are just going for so much. So yeah, I bet you the Washington team is going to end up going for about probably $5-6 billion, maybe even more than that. But that is nuts. $4 billion for the shitty-ass Phoenix Suns. Then on Wednesday night, the Brooklyn Nets. This team is, they're looking pretty good right now. I don't consider them to be a championship threat yet at this point. I mean, they've got to play consistent basketball for an entire season for me to believe in them. But they are on a tear right now. They actually scored 91 points in the first half, which is the third most ever in NBA history, in a win against the Golden State Warriors in a 143-113 win. So they just dominated the Warriors, which is just, they don't have Steph Curry right now, so that is a big deal for the Warriors. But still, at the same time, you should not be getting your ass kicked that bad. And it really was all about Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving didn't even play in this game. He had an injury that night. So it was really just Kevin Durant. The dude was on fire. And I think he only missed like one or two shots in that first half. So yeah, no, he was extremely efficient. He has been having a spectacular year. If he maintains the play that he's playing at right now, yeah, that dude's got to be in the MVP conversation as well, because he really has this Brooklyn Nets team rocking and rolling. And then last night, the New Orleans Pelicans, CJ McCollum, dropped 40 points against the San Antonio Spurs in a New Orleans Pelican win over the Spurs, 126-117. That's actually like the, because I can't remember who it was a couple weeks ago who just went off for the Pelicans, but As much as the Pelicans as Zion goes, he's the dude there. They also have some really solid role players who are really stepping it up, and McCollum is one of them, dropping 40 points. That's a pretty big deal. I know the Spurs suck this year, but still, they're an NBA team, and dropping 40 points, that's nothing to write home about. So, yeah, New Orleans Pelicans still looking pretty solid right now. All right, moving on to the NFL and Thursday Night Football. God, that was an awful game last night between the New York Jets and the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars did get the win 19-3, and they looked like the more solid team. But, I mean, just overall, that was a snooze fest last night. We've had a couple of snooze fests on Thursday Night Football. I mean, part of the reason is because some of the matchups just aren't good at all. And then another reason is also just they don't have a lot of time to game plan and recover if they played on Sunday. So, yeah, that was just a rough game. Also, it was very rainy, but still, it was just a bad game overall from both teams. Really, the question is, what the fuck is going on with the New York Jets in their quarterback situation? I mean, Robert Saleh is starting to look like he's in over his head. I mean, you really want to give the dude a chance, but, and I mean, he's in New York, so the spotlight's on you, but this quarterback situation with the Jets is so fucking ridiculous. I just don't understand what's going on. So in last night's game, Zach Wilson started the game out as a starting quarterback because Mike White is still injured. So they started him. And he had a shitty, atrocious, awful game. I mean, he was missing some really bad passes. It just was an awful, awful game. It doesn't even look like Zach Wilson really knows how to even read a defense. And he was getting his ass booed, of course, because this is New York, and that's what they do when they're dissatisfied with what you're doing. They will boo your ass. And so they ended up bringing in this quarterback whose name I can't even recall at this current point in time. But he's mostly one of those running type quarterbacks. And he provided a little bit of a spark, but he was mostly awful too. And then and I sat here and I was thinking to myself, you do have Joe Flacco. And I'm not saying Joe Flacco is the greatest quarterback of all time by any means, but what the fuck? They haven't played this dude at all. And I'm just like, okay, well, your quarterback situation is awful this year. And I just kind of feel like the Zach Wilson experiment is done. And so I just kind of feel like Zach Wilson has probably lost a ton of confidence. Obviously, the coaching staff has lost confidence in him. And I kind of feel like the rest of the team lost confidence in him a long time ago, considering that when Mike White took over for him at starting quarterback, they were literally wearing Mike White t-shirts like, hooray, he's our quarterback. So I just kind of feel like playing Zach Wilson is just an extreme waste of time. And I feel like he's going to be trade bait for next year, obviously, but what the fuck is going on here with this quarterback situation? And this is a team that is actually playing for a playoff position. I mean, their wins matter, and now they're just slowly dwindling further and further away. So they got to work out this quarterback situation. But I really don't understand why they're not at least, if they're you know, just throwing any random quarterback out there, why not throw Joe Flacco out there? I mean, he at least has a Super Bowl ring, for Christ's sake. He could do a lot more than whoever the fuck that dude was who went out there yesterday for quarterback. But anyways, I'm not a Jets fan, so I couldn't care less what happens with them. So, but that was Thursday Night Football. So let's move on to the rest of this week's Week 16 football games. We do have quite a bit of the majority of the games are actually on Saturday this week because it's Christmas Eve on Saturday. And then Sunday is Christmas Day. And so there's only three games on Sunday. I kind of feel like that's more just because there's a lot. Usually Christmas Day has always been kind of reserved for the NBA. And so I have a feeling there was just kind of a situation worked out between the networks and the leagues where they're like, okay, NFL, we know you kick everybody's ass in the ratings. Can we please have our day still? And they're like, okay, fine. We'll put three okay games on and then you can have your day. But Christmas Eve is pretty much the good chunk of them, so let's get started with the first Saturday game is the Buffalo Bills at the Chicago Bears. Right now, the Bills are a 9.5-point favorite. it doesn't matter to me really what the weather is going to be like. Apparently, there's supposed to be a big ass snowstorm. But in my opinion, the Bills were going to kick the crap out of the Bears anyways. The Bears really are just basically Justin Fields. And beyond him, they don't have much else going on. Whereas the Bills are, they're a complete team. And they seem to be getting better each and every week. And this week, I just kind of feel like even if it snows, it doesn't really matter because Josh Allen, he will throw in the snow the same as he does if it's a beautiful fucking 70-degree day outside. I just think the Bills are the much more exceptional team, and I actually kind of feel like this is going to be just a dominating game from the Bills from start to finish. I think the Bills are going to get the win 31-13. Then the New Orleans Saints are at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Browns are a 3.5-point favorite. This is just a matchup between two shitty-ass teams. It's been announced that Myles Garrett, the defensive end for the Browns, is not going to be playing in this one. He has a concussion. So that makes this game even less interesting than it already was to begin with. Neither team is really playing for anything. Both offensively just look like crap. The Browns, really, ever since Deshaun Kutson has taken over at quarterback, their offense has really taken a complete nosedive. Even Nick Chubb, they're not even really giving the ball to him, which is just weird because he's your dude. With that being said, though, I do think this is going to be a low-scoring game. And just because the Browns are at home, that's really the only reason why I'm taking them. I have the Browns winning 17-14. Then the Houston Texans are at the Tennessee Titans. Right now, the Titans are a 7.5-point favorite. Ryan Tannehill is not going to be playing in this game, and it's a possibility he may not play for the rest of the season. The Houston Texans, they are an awful team, but they do have fight in them. And this is a division opponent, so I do expect them to I expect it to be a close matchup, especially because Malik Willis at quarterback for the Titans, he's just really not that good, or at least he hasn't shown me that he's that good. So I don't think he's going to provide any type of major spark for this already atrocious Tennessee Titans offense. I just kind of feel like this is going to be mostly a Derrick Henry-led game, and the Titans defense is just going to step it up. And I think the Titans will win a close one, 20-17. Then the Seattle Seahawks are at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are a 9.5-point favorite. Seattle has been falling off the last couple of weeks, actually like the last month of the season here. They've been coming back down to earth. They're still pretty solid, especially on the ground attack, but I don't think they're going to be able to keep up with a team like the Kansas City Chiefs. It might start off as a close game in the beginning, but I just kind of feel like the Chiefs will run away with it in the end and will be way too much for the Seattle Seahawks on the offensive side of the ball. I think the Chiefs will get the win 27-17. Then the New York Giants are at the Minnesota Vikings. Right now, the Vikings are a 4.5-point favorite. And the Giants are also kind of similar to me with the Seahawks, where they have finally come back down to earth. They really have shit going on offensively. Even Saquon Barkley has fallen off the face of this earth. Defensively, they have started to step it up. But I just kind of feel like the Vikings, they're at home. They're coming off of that big win. So they did get an extra day of rest since they played on Saturday last week. So I just kind of feel like Minnesota is going to be ready and they're going to just roll over the Giants 30-14. Then the Cincinnati Bengals are at the New England Patriots. Right now, the Bengals are a 3.5-point favorite. New England is coming off of that horrifying loss last week against the Raiders, whereas the Bengals are coming off of a big win against the Buccaneers. And the Bengals are pretty much the hottest team in the league right now. I do expect the Patriots defense to give the Bengals fits throughout this game, but I still think the Bengals will score, and the Patriots offense is just one of the worst in the league, and they keep getting worse. They haven't shown really any type of identity outside of a Ramondre Stevenson, but at the quarterback position, you could just tell that Mac Jones is extremely frustrated with what is going on, and he's not even really that good of a quarterback, but I can't say that I disagree with his frustration with what's going on, especially because Matt Patricia is the play caller and that dude handles defense. So I don't know what's going on with New England, but I do know what's going on with Cincinnati and they're winning, and I do expect the Bengals to get the win in this one 24-13. Then the Detroit Lions are at the Carolina Panthers. Right now, the Lions are a 3.5-point favorite. The Panthers have shown some fight this season. But the Detroit Lions are also a hot team right now, and I just think they've really started to find their identity and what they're all about. And since the Panthers, not really that good of a team, don't really have that much to play for, I just kind of feel like Detroit's going to roll over them 28-10. Then we have the Atlanta Falcons at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are a 6.5-point favorite. There will not be no Lamar Jackson once again this week. It's going to be Huntley at quarterback. I kind of feel like this is going to be just a ground and pound for Baltimore, where they're just going to really rely on J.K. Dobbins, who has got it going since he came back from his stint on the IR for the majority of this season. He really has been their workhorse. And so I expect him to have a good game, and I expect the Baltimore defense to really hold it down. Atlanta Falcons don't really have much to play for besides a high draft pick, which is what I'm sure they're looking for. And so I expect Baltimore, even though I expect they're going to get a win, I think it's still going to be a close game, 20-14. Then the afternoon games on Saturday, the Washington Commanders at the San Francisco 49ers. Right now the Niners are a 6.5-point favorite. Washington is just not a good team at all, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They do get Chase Young back this week, but I don't think that's going to really make much of a difference for them. The 49ers are just a much more solid team than Washington. I think their defense is going to take care of business, probably cause a couple of turnovers, and then set their offense up in good scoring position. And hell, the defense could even score some touchdowns themselves. So I do expect it to be a hard-fought battle between the two teams, but I've got the 49ers winning this one 24-10. Then the Philadelphia Eagles are at my Dallas Cowboys. Right now the Cowboys are a 1.5-point favorite. Jalen Butthurts will not be playing in this game. He hurt his throwing shoulder in the last game against the Chicago Bears, so he won't be in this one. But Gardner Minshew will be the quarterback, and that dude, you cannot overlook him. Even though he's their backup quarterback, he used to be a starter in Jacksonville and did have a pretty decent stint with the Jaguars. But I mean, I don't feel like he's going to be asked to do a whole lot because, I mean, overall, the Eagles do have the best ground attack in the league, so they really could just turn to Sanders for the majority of the game. Minshew also has his pick of the litter at receiver because he's got A.J. Brown on one side, and then he's got Smith on the other. So it's just he's got good wide receivers to pick from. And then the defense is solid as well, too. So I don't really feel like this is going to be much of a loss for the Eagles without Hurts. I think that they're still basically the exact same team. This is also a division matchup. And with the Cowboys coming off of that tough loss against the Jaguars, I feel like they're going to step it up for this one. They really could use a big win like this. And I think the Cowboys' defense will step it up. And I think Dak will take the criticism that he's received all week and turn it around and have a really positive week and possibly even kind of have like a game-winning drive, something like that. And I think the Cowboys will get the win 28-23. And then the Saturday night game is going to be the Las Vegas Raiders at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now the Steelers are a 2.5-point favorite. And it really is kind of a toss-up between both of these teams. Really what puts me over the edge, though, is the death of Franco Harris earlier in the week. This game was already set up because it is the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. They were going to be retiring Franco Harris's number. I mean, they're still doing that anyways. So this was going to be a huge celebration of Franco Harris. And the fact that he died earlier in the week, I kind of feel like Pittsburgh's really going to step it up this week. If there's any game that they're going to win this season, I feel like this would be the one. I don't feel like it's going to be like a dominating performance from them. I feel like it's still going to be a close game, but I do have the Pittsburgh Steelers winning this one 20-14. Then moving on to the Sunday Christmas Day games. The first game is going to be the Green Bay Packers at the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins are a 4.5-point favorite. The Green Bay Packers are actually kind of on a nice little winning streak for themselves this season. The Dolphins are on a horrible losing streak, so these two teams are kind of going in the opposite direction. But I feel like the Dolphins are the much better team. The Packers haven't shown me that they're a legit team yet. And I don't really believe in the Dolphins either, but I just kind of feel like they need a win, and the Packers haven't really provided any type of spark this season, in my opinion. So I just kind of feel like it's going to be a close game, but I feel like Miami's offense is going to be just slightly better, and I have the Miami Dolphins winning this one 27-21. Then the afternoon game on Christmas Day is going to be the Denver Broncos at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now, the Rams are a half-point favorite. And I mean, both of these teams are just awful. The Rams, basically, in my opinion, have just, they've just called it in. Almost none of their starters are going to be playing in this game. And why should they? Because they aren't going anywhere this season, so why bother? Denver, while they aren't going anywhere this season either, I kind of feel like they want and need wins just to show that, hey, we got it and we could get the win. So I feel like Denver is going to show up for this one, and they're going to get the win 20-7. And then the Sunday night game is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, Tampa is a 3.5-point favorite. And Arizona is just kind of in the same boat to me as, like, the Rams. They're just an awful fucking team. They are on their third-string quarterback now, Trace McSorley. And really, there's nothing good to say about this team. Now, there really isn't much good to say about the Buccaneers, but they are a team that's still in the playoff hunt, and they still do have Tom Brady. So, I mean, I kind of feel like they're pissed off from the loss last week. They really could use a good win this week. And I feel like they're going to have a pretty solid game this week, probably their best win of the season, I feel like. And I have the Buccaneers winning 24-14. And then we'll get to the Monday Night Football game on the Monday show, of course. So, yeah, just remember that we have a jam-packed weekend full of football. And then also in football news, it was announced just yesterday that NFL Sunday Ticket will be available next year on YouTube TV. As you know, the DirecTV contract is ending this year, and so the NFL has been working out deals with other other networks and distributors or streaming services. And turned out it's going to be now with YouTube TV. So if you have a YouTube TV subscription, I guess you have the option through that. Or they're also going to have like an a la carte option where people could just pay for the Sunday ticket. And that's going to be beginning next year in 2023. All right. And so with the passing of Franco Harris earlier this week, this week's Trop 5 list is going to be the Trop 5 Franco Harris moments. He is one of the greatest running backs or fullbacks of all time. That's what he was drafted as. But fullback, running back, they're kind of the same position, and that's what most people really remember him as. But that's what he was mostly known for, is the fullback position. But he is a Hall of Famer. He was drafted in round one with pick number 13 in the 1972 draft by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Oddly enough, this was not really who they wanted to go with. They actually wanted Newhouse, who ended up going to the Dallas Cowboys and lost to them in a Super Bowl. So that's kind of very coincidental where they wanted to draft Newhouse. He's the running back of the Cowboys in one of the Super Bowls, and they ended up winning that Super Bowl. So and also, I mean, Franco Harris, if you really actually compare him to all the running backs of that time, I mean, he was basically like second to O.J. Simpson in like every category. And that says a lot, because O.J. Simpson was hands down one of the greatest running backs of all time. And if you are anywhere in his stratosphere when it came to yardage and touchdowns and all that, that says a lot. And Franco Harris was that dude. And really, if you look back at the history of this 70s Steelers 70s dynasty, pretty much every teammate has said that Franco Harris is why. He was basically the turning point of this team. It was really the beginning of it all. And he was a four-time Super Bowl champion. They won four Super Bowls in Super Bowl 9, 10, 13, and 14. Unfortunately, two of those were against my Dallas Cowboys. Thankfully, I was not born yet, so I didn't have to see that shit. He ended up being the Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl 9. Also, like I said, he was always right there with O.J. Simpson, but he had 8 seasons in a row of over at least 1,000 rushing yards. And that actually is more. He broke Jim Brown's record. Jim Brown had 7 in a row, and Franco Harris has 8 in a row and beat Jim Brown. So once again, that says a lot, because Jim Brown is not only the greatest running back of all time, also was a fullback as well. But many arguments can be made that he's the greatest football player of all time. So to even be in the stratosphere of Jim Brown, that says a lot too. And then also in Franco Harris's stellar career, since he went to 4 Super Bowls, he also has quite a few records that are Super Bowl records. And two of them being he has 101 carries and then 354 rushing yards. So those are both Super Bowl records. And then he has 4 total career rushing TDs in Super Bowls. And I believe that's either second or third. I know it's up there. It's tied with somebody. So he pretty much owns tons of records, Super Bowl records, which matters more. Nothing matters more than how you perform in the postseason. And let me tell you what, Franco Harris, he was great during the regular season, but he always stepped it up in the postseason. And basically all my top 5 moments, they are all postseason moments, but the dude was one of the greatest of all time. So, and here are 5 of the top 5 Franco Harris moments and why he was one of the greats. Starting with number 5. You're going to notice, by the way, so basically all 4 Super Bowls are involved in this. And then, of course, the Immaculate Reception is somewhere in this list. But coincidentally, and it's not my Dallas Cowboys bias, I know you're probably thinking to yourself, it's because you like the Cowboys, bitch. Nah. It's just because, coincidentally, he didn't have that great of performances against the Cowboys in the Super Bowl. So the two lowest rated moments are, of course, against my Cowboys. But hey, it still pains me that they're even in here because they were close Super Bowls too. So the Cowboys could have easily won those 2 Super Bowls, especially one of them. But anyways, let's get to the top 5 Franco Harris moments, starting with number 5, Super Bowl 10 versus the Dallas Cowboys. They won 21-17. It was a close battle between these two teams. Actually, during the season, Franco Harris's statistics ended up being 1,246 rushing yards, which was second to, of course, O.J. Simpson. He had 10 rushing touchdowns, 214 receiving yards, and 1 receiving touchdown. And in this Super Bowl, he rushed for 82 yards and had a 26-yard reception. And that 26-yard reception was kind of like his biggest play in that game just because it set them up for a scoring possession in that one. And, of course, the Steelers would go on to win that Super Bowl 21-17. Then at number 4 on my top 5 Franco Harris moments is Super Bowl 13 versus the Dallas Cowboys. Another close one, which the Steelers won 35-31. In this particular season, Franco Harris rushed for 1,082 rushing yards, 8 rushing touchdowns, 144 receiving yards. And then in the Super Bowl, he ended up having 68 yards, 1 touchdown, and 22 receiving yards. And the 1 touchdown actually was it was a big touchdown. It was a turning point in the game, which really basically gave the Steelers a 10-point lead, I believe, and would basically cement the win for them. In the third quarter, it was a 22-yard touchdown. And I mean, for the most part, the Cowboys were pretty much held Franco Harris down. And that says a lot, but that one play really put them over the edge and really got them the win against my Cowboys, of course. Then at number 3 on my top 5 Franco Harris moments, Super Bowl 14 versus the Los Angeles Rams. This was an absolute ass-kicking by the Pittsburgh Steelers. They won 31-19. Now, it's kind of crazy because they did have quite a bit of turnovers in this one. It's just the Rams did not play that good of a game. And in this season, also Franco Harris's career or season stats: 1,186 rushing yards and 11 touchdowns. And this season would be his 7th in a row, eclipsing 1,000 yards. And so this would be when he tied Jim Brown for the record of most 1,000 yard rushing season. So that was a great season for Franco Harris personally. Then in this particular Super Bowl, he had 46 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. Then he also had 66 receiving yards. And then both of these touchdowns, the first one was a one-yard touchdown, and it was the Pittsburgh's first touchdown for them to go ahead 10-7. And then basically they just went off from there. And then he also scored their last touchdown, which was also a one-yard touchdown. And at that point, they just had a huge lead. But it was basically to seal the victory. And it was also basically the end of that Steelers dynasty as well. And it was, if you really watch the game, it was an extremely sloppy game. I believe Terry Bradshaw had like 4 interceptions in this game. But, I mean, that just goes to show you, man, it doesn't matter. It's any given Sunday. And if you can overcome that shit, you do. And I mean, they kicked their ass 31-19. And that Rams team, I know a lot of people don't really know the history of the league, but I do. That Rams team from back in the day, those were some dudes, especially on defense. I'm pretty sure this was with the Deacon, man. He was one hell of a defensive end. So if you ever get a chance to look at some highlights, you might want to take a look at these Rams teams because now they didn't have Dickerson anymore. This was post. Was this, this might have been post-Dickerson, or actually, you know what, they actually might have got Dickerson a couple years later, but regardless, the Rams, this LA Rams team actually used to be pretty damn good, especially on the defensive side of things. I know they got their asses whooped in this one, but still, that was a crazy Rams team. Then at number 2 on my top 5 Franco Harris moments, Super Bowl 4 versus the Minnesota Vikings. Pittsburgh Steelers won this one 16-6. Now, this, of course, was basically the greatest performance he had ever had in his postseason career. He was the MVP of this Super Bowl. He rushed for 158 yards and 1 touchdown. So he just had a phenomenal game. I know that it's a low-scoring affair, but also, well, speaking of defense, this was actually the Purple People Eaters defense, the Minnesota Vikings defense. They were killers. This was just a crazy team. And I mean, really, that's what this was a huge defensive battle, because also the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s, while they had some amazing offensive players, they were known for their defense. That's for damn sure. But in this season as well, Franco Harris' career season stats for the season was 1,006 rushing yards, 5 rushing touchdowns, 200 receiving yards, and 1 receiving touchdown. So he had a solid season, and he capped it off with a Super Bowl win and a Super Bowl MVP. And now rounding at the top 5 Franco Harris moments, of course, number 1 had to be the Immaculate Reception. December 23rd, 1972, in the AFC divisional playoff matchup versus the Oakland Raiders. Now, this was this Oakland Raiders team was damn good. Their coach was John Madden, so that's why it's kind of crazy that this is the 50th anniversary. You know, John Madden died almost a year ago on, I think, what was it, December 26th of last year. So we're closing in on a year without him. And then now Franco Harris passed away. So it's just like kind of crazy that you get these two characters, because real talk, this was John Madden's like least favorite moment in his career. One of the jokes he's always said is that once this game was over, he had to sniff like sniffing salt after sniffing salt, so many sniffing salts to even come back to life. When this game ended, it was a very controversial ending. Still to this day, any Raiders player from that team is like, nah, this was bullshit. But hey, it's written throughout the history of time as the Immaculate Reception. It gets brought up every single year. And there's even been voting panels on it, and it's actually been voted on as like the most exciting NFL play of all time. Kind of hard to argue with that. I know there's a whole lot of different plays you could choose from, but definitely in Franco Harris's career, this was 100%. Not only was it his greatest career moment, but it was also the beginning of the Steelers dynasty. And I mean, before this, I mean, the Steelers were pretty much a laughing stock for the majority of the time. Terry Bradshaw, he was a horrible quarterback. He was like benched. He would start. He would get benched. He would start. And so like they didn't know what was going on with this team. And then the Immaculate Reception literally turned this team around. And I would say they are the team they are because of this, and this is where it started, against a damn good Oakland Raiders team. So let's see if I could set the scene for you, because what I always love about these old games and watching old NFL films highlights, of course, is the amazing music that follows with it, and also the great narration of the likes of John Facenda. So I'm going to give you my best John Facenda impression on this. So first, let's get the music, you know. Dun 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 dun. All right, so here we go. John Facenda by Katie Drop. With 22 seconds left on the clock, the Pittsburgh Steelers are down 7-6. It's 4th and 10. Terry Bradshaw drops back to pass. He's scrambling around, trying to find anybody to get the ball to. He just tosses the ball up to John Fuqua. And the amazing assassin, Jack Tatum, delivers a huge blow to John Fuqua, who does not catch the ball. The ball actually pops into the air. And you will see the great Franco Harris scramble as fast as he can to this ball. As it's falling, he picks it up, catches it right before it hits the ground. And you can see the Raiders defenders not really knowing what's going on. They see Franco Harris run right past them, and they start to chase him, and he scores the game-winning touchdown. And the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Oakland Raiders in the AFC Divisional Playoffs 13-7. So how'd you like that, guys? Yeah. I know, that was a great John Facenda impression. I'm sure he would be proud. But, I mean, real talk. That's what I really love about those NFL films. NFL films highlights, just because the music's perfect, the narration's perfect, and just the way the breakdown is perfect. And the immaculate reception. That is, by far, the greatest Franco Harris moment. And like I said, that was the beginning of the Pittsburgh Steelers dynasty. And, you know, shout out to Franco Harris for being such an amazing football player. You could tell he was exactly who he presented himself to be, because really nobody has had anything bad to say about him, even prior to his death. Nobody ever, as I said, every teammate of his is like, we would not have won one of those four Super Bowls without Franco Harris. He's where it started, and it really started with that immaculate reception, and that is just an amazing play. And shout out to Franco Harris, RIP man. I'm sure the Pittsburgh Steelers will do you proud at least one night this season, because the Steelers have not had a good season, so we'll see what happens there Saturday night. Hopefully they can make you proud. Maybe they'll even have a crazy ending to their game. Maybe not immaculate reception type, but maybe some like last minute crazy drive, but or maybe some kind of crazy play like that, because that's what makes football so great, are moments like that. All right, y'all, I hope you all have a Merry Christmas, and I will talk to you guys on Monday.